Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and open up the Senate Judiciary Committee. Today, we have a number of bills that are set for a public hearing and possible work session. I see Representative Cameron here. Since he has other duties in the building, we're going to go ahead and open up our first public hearing to take his testimony, which will be on House Bill 3450A.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3450A comes to you from Representative Cameron, reduces the minimum time from 2 weeks to 72 hours before the first day of employment that an employer can notify an employee via a written employment offer that the arbitration agreement is required as a condition of employment.
Great. Kevin, thank you for being here.
Mr. Chair, thank you for having me and putting this bill up at the front so I can get back to work. I'm not sure I wouldn't much rather spend some time on the Judiciary Committee. I miss being on there after being on the House Judiciary for two terms, so I appreciate the work you're doing. For the record, it's State Representative Kevin Cameron representing South Salem, House District 19, which is South and East Rural Salem, Almsville, and Turner. And today I wanted just to share a little bit about House Bill 3450. Back in 2007, this issue got caught up in a bill that worked on non-competition agreements. We worked on it over on the House side and the Senate side, and the arbitration agreement got caught up in the same language as non-competition agreements. And you're going to hear some testimony from people who actually have to deal with this on a daily basis, but the bottom line is any employer who has in their employer handbook an arbitration agreement is forced to wait, and especially during this economy, employees who want to go to work, they're forced to wait 2 weeks before they can actually go to work to make that agreement whole. And this bill, prior to 2007, there was no waiting period. This bill would reduce it down to 72 hours from the two-week period. So there would still be a time in there where the employee would be able to take the handbook, make a review of that handbook. If they want to seek counsel, they certainly could do that. But this is a more reasonable time, 3 days versus 2 weeks, to get people to work. And a lot of these jobs that we're talking about are people who need to work very quickly and employers who have openings that they could fill almost immediately. So I thank you for your time today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have them for me specifically.
Well, let's see. Any questions for Representative Cameron? Kevin, thank you very much. Right. We're going to go ahead and call up the rest of the individuals that are on the sign-up sheet for 3450. I've got Bill Sheldon and Steve Johnson.
Hello. My name is Bill Sheldon. I'm the general manager of Bentley's Grill here in Salem. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. We do have an arbitration agreement and waiver of jury trial in our employee handbook. And in dealing with it, in hiring new employees, we go through the interview process and we go through the review of their references, and then we sit down and I give them the offer letter. And in that offer letter, it states that they can't start for 2 weeks. Many of my employees are entry-level employees. Many of the people that we're hiring aren't working, and they look at me kind of dumbfounded with a blank look going, so you've hired me, but I can't start for 2 weeks. And I say yes and explain the arbitration agreement. And to a person, their reply is, well, can I just sign that now? I'm ready to go to work. And so that kind of causes a problem for people who really want to get to work. And since a third of my employees are kind of entry level, many of them are not working at the time, and 2 more weeks of not working is kind of a burden for them. And so that's one case. And another case, Jason McCoy is an employee of mine. He testified at the House hearing, and his testimony concerned he's on vacation now, a rough life for him, but he was a rehire for us. He had left to go to California to do some schooling and came back as a rehire. And his experience, having already signed the arbitration agreement, already had been an employee, came back, and we went through the routine again. He goes, well, I've already signed that. I don't have to wait 2 weeks, right? No, you have to wait two more weeks to sign it again. So that was just another example of the frustration by the employees over the 2 weeks and their willingness to go to work right now.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any questions? Seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Okay. I had Steve Johnson. Steve, oh, okay, I was going to say you didn't come up earlier. I was wondering.
Good morning. I am Steve Johnson, and I'm with Vips Industries, Inc., and I am president of that company, and we are the owner-operator of Bentley's Grill. Bill Sheldon is our general manager, as well as the Grand Hotel downtown Salem and his sister property in Tualatin, Oregon. We also manage the conference center downtown Salem. We have approximately 200 employees on that block right here in downtown Salem, all hospitality, obviously. And as Bill was just testifying, we have a young crew, a lot of entry-level folks, notwithstanding everybody's best efforts, some turnover. This issue that we have in front of us is a very, very simple one from our perspective, but I did want to take the time to reiterate Bill's testimony to the effect that a two-week waiting period following the agreement to work before commencement of work is impractical, not only for the employer, as Bill was suggesting and experiencing, but also the employee. A simple principle you mentioned, it's understandable. I just wanted to reinforce that. I could have asked all of our general managers down here and other employees, but I didn't want to take all of your time for that. But I wanted to summarize that myself to just add some import, if I could, from the employer's perspective, and just remind group here that there is no abridgment or effect whatsoever on the rights that are otherwise preserved under the existing statute. Simply a shortening of that time period for consideration of it from 2 weeks to more manageable 3 days. Any questions for either Bill or myself?
Any questions? I think, Steve, you covered it. Thank you very much. Was there anyone else who wanted to testify on 3450? Aha, JL, come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I won't take much of your time just to say organizationally this has been an important issue for AOI members.
And the name?
J.L. Wilson, representing Associated Oregon Industries. You'd think I'd remember. For AOI's perspective, the ability to put employees to work sooner than a two-week time frame is a pretty critical deal for both the employer and employee, so we support the bill.
All right, thank you, J.L. Any questions? All right. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on 3450. I'm going to hold off on the work session because I've got one member who's testifying in another committee, and we will move it out today one way or the other. All right. Thank you very much. We're going to go ahead and close that public hearing, and now we're going to go ahead and open up our next scheduled public hearing, which is House Bill 2928.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2929A comes to you from Representative Hull. The allows testimony by a party to an action under the Family Abuse Prevention Act or a witness in the proceedings by telephone or two-way electronic communication as well as in person.
All right. We have Sybil Hebb and Taya Dowling?
Jane.
Okay. Sorry. The J looked like a T.
Also, Chair Kosansky, if I may, Melinda from Representative Holby's office is here as well.
All right. There she is. Come on up, Melinda.
Okay. Chair Kosansky, members of the committee, my name is Melinda Hoffman, and I work for State Representative Paul Holby. And I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2928A. As you may know, the state is experiencing a dramatic increase in instances of domestic violence and fatalities related to domestic violence. I believe this proposed legislation, if passed, could play a small part in reversing that trend. When a victim of domestic violence takes the step of leaving an abusive relationship and seeks an order of protection, batters often retaliate. It's not uncommon for violence to escalate for a period after a restraining order is served to the abuser, And in too many cases, victims are seriously injured or even killed in the aftermath of seeking a restraining order, as we have seen here in Oregon, actually. Victims leaving abusive relationships are sometimes forced to flee for their safety after obtaining an order, and in this case, it can be dangerous for a victim to return to the community to attend a court hearing to defend the protective order. House Bill 2928 makes a small but important change in current law and seeks to rectify this type of situation. The bill will facilitate victims' ability to request permission to appear or for their witnesses to appear in court by telephone or via other electronic means, and Sybil can speak further to that. In closing, I urge your support of House Bill 2928. Thank you.
Thank you. Who would like to go next?
Thank you, Chair Prasansky, members of the committee, Sybil Hebb with the Oregon Law Center in support of 2928A. And I appreciate your time on this and Representative Holvey and Melinda's great work on this issue. The Law Center, as you know, represents low-income Oregonians. Many of our clients are victims of domestic violence and sexual assault, and the accessibility of the restraining order protection process is something that's important to us. I echo Melinda's comments and would just focus on explaining what the actual bill does, and it is a very small change. There is current statutory authority in Chapter 405.400 that's cited in my testimony that allows in any civil proceeding any party to request a motion, permission to appear by telephone. And that statute sets out a series of criteria that the judge should take into consideration when using his or her discretion to decide whether to grant that motion or not. In no circumstance may the judge grant the motion and allow telephone testimony or testimony by video conferencing if to do so would be prejudicial to the other party. So that's a fundamental criteria that this bill wouldn't change. The two changes that this bill would make is, one, it would provide a cross-reference to Chapter 45 in the Oregon Restraining Order Statute. Many people going through the Restraining Order Statute, whether they're victims or respondents, in the cases are pro se. They don't have attorneys representing them. And so they may be looking at the statute that relates to restraining orders, but they may have no idea what the other statutes are out there, and they don't know how to do that kind of research. This would put that statute reference into the restraining order statute. It would give the parties the ability to look at that statute and understand that they had the right to request that permission. The other two things that the bill would do is it addresses the fact that the current telephone testimony legislation requires that the motion to request this permission be submitted at least 30 days in advance of the hearing. Restraining order procedures, as you know, are expedited procedures, and so a 30-day response time is not practical. The current statute allows the court to waive those timelines in any kind of case. This bill just says that in considering a motion for telephone testimony, the court shall take into account the expedited nature of the restraining order process when determining whether or not to allow a waiver of the usual 30-day period. The other change that the bill does is it says that in considering all of the good cause criteria, the court should take into account victim safety. It doesn't deny the court's fundamental overriding concern of avoiding prejudice, and it just adds the victim safety criteria to the current list of all the criteria that the court takes into account when considering good cause. And so we think that the bill provides just a small change that will greater facilitate people's ability to make these requests and give the court a little additional guidance in how to make these determinations in restraining order proceedings. I would echo the testimony before me of indicating that there are cases where, and these are probably the extreme cases, but there are cases where it is extremely dangerous for a victim to come to a courthouse and personally confront a perpetrator. And in Multnomah County most recently, there was in fact a fatality on the courthouse steps related to a victim's appearing for a restraining order hearing. And so it's that kind of circumstance we want to give the court the better discretion and ability to address. The only other thing I would add is that we worked with the Department of Justice and with the Criminal Defense Attorneys Association in drafting this language. There were amendments on the House side that resolved any defense attorney objections, and so there's no opposition to the bill.
All right. Thank you, Jane.
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, my name is Jane Downing. I'm the Executive Director of Mid-Valley Women's Crisis Service, and we serve victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, stalking, and human trafficking in Marion County. And I appreciate the opportunity to come this morning and just want to add the voice of the victims that we serve. This would serve a small percentage of individuals, but I can tell you in my 20 years of working with victims, I have had individuals who absolutely could have benefited from legislation such as this, that they actually would not go forward with a case because they were so afraid of being in the courtroom. And the courts, I believe, do a good job of trying to protect individuals, but as Ms. Hebb has stated, there are situations where that absolutely would place someone in danger. And so we encourage you to vote yes on this because we know that for a small amount of people, this could be life-saving for them. And so we appreciate your attention to this matter. Thank you.
Thank you. Question, Senator Wissett first.
Thank you. It's my understanding that from reading this, that under current law, you can get a restraining order through FAPA for up to a year, and that can actually be extended with a telephone conversation or telephone hearing. This bill would then make it possible to actually get a go back to court and get a permanent restraining order without ever facing your accuser. And so, I mean, from the standpoint, help me with this: if the person is an owner of a home, and this person is excluded from their home by a restraining order for up to a year on the basis of a telephone conversation with the alleged person who's abused, and then this would allow them to actually be permanently excluded from their home without ever facing their accuser.
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Whitsitt, an initial application for a restraining order is allowed under current law by telephone. That's a rare case when that happens, but it is allowed. And this bill would just clarify what is current law, which is that anyone in current restraining order hearings can already ask to have testimony submitted by telephone. And that's true of the person who applied for it as well as the person who is subject to it. And that statute also addresses the ability of witnesses for either party to appear by phone. So that's already current law. And the court can consider those criteria and deny a request if they feel like it would, if the judge feels like it would be unfair or inappropriate. This bill just adds two criteria to the court's decision about whether or not to allow telephone testimony, and one is to the list of factors that should be considered, which include, under current law, witness convenience, the expense of testifying, for example, if someone wants a witness who's living currently in Florida but whose evidence is really relevant to the court's determination, they may make a request for that person to appear by phone, and the court can think about how expensive would it be for that person to travel here to Oregon, how beneficial is the testimony, and it's a weighing analysis that they do based on the facts and given their judgment of the case. But they are disallowed from granting such a motion if to do so would be prejudicial to the other party. And so this bill doesn't change that analysis other than to add that victim safety ought to be considered in that picture, and requires that the expedited nature of the proceeding be considered in determining whether to grant the motion with less than 30 days' notice. The other party still has a chance to object and to contest that request.
As I read the bill, and as the SMS here states, House Bill 2928A adds the telephonic option to ORS 107-716 for the permanent restraining order hearings, and it also adds it to ORS 107-725 for renewal of existing restraining order. So apparently there is a change in law here, that if it's are we saying this is incorrect?
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Whitsitt, I have not seen, you're reading from the SMS, is that
yes.
Correct? I haven't seen the SMS, but the bill itself just puts into place a cross-reference to ORS 45.400, which is current law and the bill just cross-references that statute into the current Oregon restraining order statute and adds those two criteria, as I explained, that the consideration of good cause should be looked at with respect to victim safety, and that the expedited nature of the proceedings should be considered.
And it's your testimony that the currently, under current law, the court can issue a permanent restraining order or renew an existing restraining order by telephone.
Under current law, correct, Chair Przanski and Senator Whitsitt, in any civil proceeding, ORS 45.400 applies, and the court may determine in any type of proceeding, whether it's a restraining order or a custody order or a landlord-tenant case, in any kind of civil proceeding, they may make these analyses. This bill cross-references that statute and adds two criteria to the consideration.
Short answer is yes.
Yes. Sorry. I apologize.
Council would agree with that?
I'm not sure. I was looking at something else, so I didn't find the questions.
The question was, Bill, under current law, is the court able to issue a permanent restraining order and or renew an existing restraining order by telephone, or do they have to appear in person?
I believe so, but I have an opportunity to look at it again.
Sure.
Okay.
I believe that they can appear by telephone?
I'd not like to look at it again.
That's my understanding, too, but this is what makes it clear, correct?
Yes, and Chair Przanski and members of the committee, ORS 45.400 is the telephone testimony statute, and it, upon the motion of any party or for good cause shown, the court may order that the testimony of a party or any witness for the moving party be taken by telephone or other two-way electronic communication device in any civil proceeding or any proceeding under ORS Chapter 419B. So it's any civil proceeding or any juvenile court proceeding. The court may already consider these motions by any party for the testimony of that party or a witness, and it sets out further a set of criteria that the court should consider. This bill, House Bill 2928A, simply adds two criteria to that determination. One, that victim safety be considered in looking at the analysis, and then two, that the expedited nature of the FAPA, Family Abuse Prevention Act, proceedings be considered when determining what the timelines ought to be for making those motions.
All right, so let me get clarification. What you just said, Sybil, I understand and agree, but I want to just kind of put this in perspective. So we already have an existing statute that allows for the court to consider whether or not they're going to let telephonic testimony to come in.
Correct.
And it's discretionary.
Correct.
So the judge can say, he or she can say yes or no, depending on the criteria, once they review it and they set the record. This bill would allow the court to consider two other criteria within the list that's already existing law.
That's correct.
All right. Any other questions or comments? All right. Thank you very much. Was there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on House Bill 2928? Not seeing anyone. We'll go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2928. And all right, so what we're going to do, this one's going to be put over based on the question as to the writing within the SMS, give council an opportunity to review and get back with Senator Whitsitt. And with that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and open a work session on the first bill we took testimony on, which was House Bill 3450.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3450A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 3450A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Senator Bonamici?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry I had to miss the hearing on this bill this morning. I had a bill up in Ways and Means I had to attend this morning. I recall generally, but not specifically, the discussion about Senate Bill 248, which came through the House Judiciary Committee in 2007. This bill, House Bill 3450, makes a significant change to a portion of that bill, and until I get an opportunity to look at the reasons why that significant change is being made, I would prefer that we wait on this until I can look at that. And my apologies, Mr. Chair, I thought I'd be here to listen to the testimony.
Yeah, fair enough. We'll go ahead and close the work session since we're going to hold up on the other one.
I'll withdraw my motion. So,
all right, Senator Cruz is gracious enough to withdraw the motion. We'll give everyone an opportunity. We have plenty of time to move both of these. But for the record, for the sponsors of the bill, we will be bringing it back at some point for discussion work and for the work group.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. And I, again, my apologies, but I didn't get a chance to go look at that underlying reasons for the time.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, basically, as it says, what the measure does, we had testimony from Representative Cameron and two individuals who are here within the Salem and testified as to the let's say the delay that's required under the current legislation, which was 248, of the two-week period based on having arbitration agreements, and that it was in fact causing many prospective employees angst that they cannot start working for 2 weeks during this quote-unquote cooling off period or understanding period prior to working, and that the bill would shorten it to 72 hours, still giving them that opportunity to review and get assistance from counsel if they chose to. But once you get a chance to look at it.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. And my concern is whether it wouldn't just make more sense for those people to be able to waive the 2 weeks and begin work right away rather than take the two-week waiting period away from everybody, because there may be some people who would benefit from the two-week waiting period, and that would factor into their decision about whether they should look for other employment or negotiate further. I just want to answer those questions because I know there was a lot of work put into the 2000. I recall the work that went into the 2007 bill, and it was pretty carefully negotiated.
Okay, fair enough.
All right, so we'll go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 3450. We're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3286A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3286A allows the Department of Corrections to charge a collective fee for serving process and other documents of inmates and employees of the Department of Corrections. Limits the fee the department may charge to a sheriff to what a sheriff could charge for service of process. Requires the department to adopt appropriate rules effective upon passage.
Good morning. Is Brian?
Good morning. Chair Przanski and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, I am Brian Bleck, Westside Institutions Administrator for the Department of Corrections, and I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 3286A. This bill would allow the Department of Corrections to charge and collect fees for serving papers to inmates residing and staff working in DOC facilities. The fee would be charged to the person or entity that requests DOC serve the papers, not the inmate or the staff being served. Currently, the processing serving companies and county sheriffs have the ability to charge for this service. This bill would allow the DOC to charge and collect the same fees as the sheriff's charge as out as defined in statute 21.410. Annually, approximately 1,000 DOC inmates and employees are served papers. Once the department receives those, we're the ones often that serve the papers for the serving company or the county sheriffs, at no charge to the party that is requesting this service. This is an added-on responsibility and workload for the staff at the institutions. This concept started as a suggestion from an employee within the correction system, and once again, this would by statute allow us to charge fees similar to what sheriffs is currently allowed to. So, thank you for allowing me to testify. If you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
All right, we'll see if we have any questions. I don't think so. Thank you very much. Was there anyone else who wanted to testify today on 3286A? Not seeing one, we'll call. Okay.
Maybe I do have a question. If I could.
You can. He's still here at the table so far.
He is. He was about ready to stand up. So walk me through this, okay? I'm trying to figure out how complicated this or simple this is. Somebody comes to the front gate. They want to serve a paper. The handoff is to you, or the department, what happens then?
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Cruz, what often happens is that the sheriff's office or the serving process serving company will bring them to our front. If it's a staff member, they'll bring it to our front office in the institutions, and often the staff in the front office will call the staff members that are being served and serve the papers instead of the actual county sheriff's office or the serving company. As far as the inmates goes, most of the time, some county sheriff's office actually do stay and serve the paper. That takes some time to locate the inmate, bring them forward, and they serve them. In most cases, once again, the paperwork's handed off to our staff, where we have to locate, bring the inmate forward, and then serve the papers for that company that they're the one collecting the fee. So it doesn't increase in our workload. This process would allow us to be, a third party that currently exists. We have the process serving companies. It's an option. The county sheriff's is currently an option. This would give whoever's requesting a summons be served that they could go through the Department of Corrections to have it served.
Yes.
Okay, so, but the responsibility of the department, other than getting the paper from him and delivering it to him, okay, however that happens, once that's done, that's the end of your responsibility, correct?
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Cruz, that is correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dinkfelder.
Thank you. I have a question. It has to do with the fiscal impact statement. There's a statement in here under the analysis that the Department of Correction would establish the fee by administrative rule. So my first question is, can you give me a sense of what that fee is? I know that it says it wouldn't be charged more than what the sheriffs are charging for a similar service. Are we talking $50, $100? What is, I'm not familiar with the sheriffs charge.
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Dinkfelder, the county sheriffs charge $36 for serving a summons, so that we would not charge more than that.
Okay, and then a follow-up question. I'll say yes since the
that is a yes.
Sure's drinking juice.
For the orange.
We're assuming it's orange juice.
Yeah, for the record, it's juice. It does say in here that the fee charge may result in fewer services and more legal visits to avoid the fee. So I'm assuming you provided that information to the fiscal office for this analysis. Can you explain that a little bit more? So fewer services within the Department of Corrections, and so that is a question, and then more legal visits to avoid the fee. So I'm not quite understanding that scenario.
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Dinkfelder, that may occur. It's difficult to assess whether that would actually, I guess that would be speculation, that some would expect that could happen, where they would actually be coming to the institution in person. I don't see that as happening very often. I don't see it that big of a change in what, like I said, it would be just a third option instead of the current two. So I'm not positive about why we would have indicated that.
Okay.
Any other questions?
I could get clarification.
It'll be helpful. I was just curious if this is based on sort of activities in other states or how that one analysis was made, but maybe we can follow up.
Yes.
Thank you. Senator Wissett.
Thank you, Chair Brzezinski. The question is, I guess, if I were going to ask to have something served on one of your employees, I would pay the sheriff $36 to take it to your institution. And with this bill were to be passed, you would charge me another $36 to carry it from the sheriff to the employee.
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Wissett, that whoever's requesting service could either choose the current sheriff's office or they could choose the Department of Corrections. It would not be an additional charge. They could pick us to serve or sheriff's office.
One or the other.
Correct.
So if the sheriff serves it at the Department of Corrections, there would be no additional charge.
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Wittsett, we would not charge an additional charge, but we may require the sheriff to actually serve the papers instead of our staff doing it, which is currently happening. I could explain that a little further, is as it is right now, they drop off the documents, they collect the fee, we do a portion of their work. We're trying to allow an avenue where it's probably more efficient for all parties to send it through us to serve. We collect the fee, we serve the paper. The outcome of this would be, in some cases, as I said, some county officers, sheriffs, excuse me, actually still serve the papers. A large portion do not. We may would change practice to where the county sheriffs would be serving the papers if the whoever requests the service goes through the county, or they could go through the Department of Corrections.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? Brian, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Was there anyone else who wants to give testimony on 3286A? Not seeing anyone. We'll close the public hearing on 3286A. And are we ready to work this one, or do we want some time? We'll wait on this one, too. So we'll start with our next public hearing. This one out of the way. And we'll go to open a public hearing on House Bill 3160A.
We've already had a public hearing.
So it was set for both.
Yes.
So I've opened up the public hearing, even though it may be a second one.
It's my third mistake.
All right.
This comes from Washington County Board of Commissioners, allows persons an alternative sentencing facility operated pursuant to community corrections plan to receive the same credit for good behavior if authorized by the county governing body that would received had the person been confined to the county local correctional facility.
All right, thank you. We have Jim McCauley, Dan Olson, and Reed Ritchie. If all three of you would come forward, that'd be great. Gentlemen, whoever would like to get started.
I'll go ahead and take that honor. Chair Przanski, thank you very much. I think this probably seems like you've had a second public hearing on it, but this is the first, perhaps because I've already made the rounds with most of the committee members. So I have County Council with me today, Dan Olson. I also have Reed Ritchie, who is our Community Corrections Director. And for the record, my name is Jim McCauley, representing Washington County. So this comes to you from the House side. It cleared the House floor with a 56-0 vote. No opposition whatsoever throughout the committee process. We believe the language in here is clean at this point in time. One other point I wanted to at least bring up on the front end of this was that Chair Dyke, Board of County Commissioners, was hoping he could make it today. And unfortunately, due to where the board meets on Tuesdays, plus some additional commitments, was unable to make it. I can go into some detail on this if you would like. It's at the discretion, I think, of yourself and the committee, or we can go straight to questions. I think it's a fairly straightforward bill.
All right. Anyone want any details besides what's in writing? Any questions? I mean, going today, we're going to have some questions here, guys. Okay. We'll start with Council Taylor.
Chairman of the committee.
Right.
Sir, on line 22 and 23, deductions of this section may be allowed for time served in alternative sentencing facility operated pursuant to community corrections plan if the county governing body authorizes the allowing the deductions.
Right.
My assumption is that the county governing body would authorize, generally speaking, deductions. It wouldn't authorize per every inmate.
Chair Przanski, Council Taylor, that is correct. Thank you for bringing that question forward. I know we had a chance to talk yesterday, so that is indeed the intent of this, was not to have a Board of Commissioners involved in the individual approval of work credit and good time. Essentially, they're approving a plan here, and that discretion is left up to the county, the sheriff in this case.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Let's see, Senator Bonamici, since this is Washington County, any questions?
No, I talked to Washington County. The time.
Senator Dingfelder. Senator Wissett. Senator, wow. All right. Well, we'll see if we can close.
Good bill should pass.
We're going to find out real quick. Is there anyone else who wants to give testimony today on House Bill 3160A? Not seeing even Paul Snyder's in the back, not coming forward. Close the public hearing. And we're going to take a wild guess here. I'm going to open the work session on House Bill 3160A.
That's risky for me. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3160A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right. Senator Cruz moves House Bill 3160A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Senator Bonamici, would you be the carrier?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair.
All righty, and we'll close the work session on House Bill 3160A. And at this point, we are going to enter into our other two work sessions that we have, or at least we're going to see about entering into them, starting with House Bill 2272A. Work session's open.
Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 2272A comes in from Representative Kotek. Gives court special appointed advocates CASA the power to consult with as well as inspect and copy the records of the child that are in the possession of an agency, hospital, school, organization, doctor, nurse, psychologist, psychiatrist, police department, or mental health clinic.
All right.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2272A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2272A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And does anyone want to be the carrier on 2272A?
No.
All right, well, Senator Cruz will give you this one and close that work session. And
I like CASA.
We'll open up the work session on House Bill 3433.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3433 comes to you from Representative Brewer, allows a person 18 years age older who was under the Family Abuse Prevention Act protective order when under the age of 18 years of old to seek a renewal of that order if the person reasonably fears abuse.
All right. Chair, we'll take a motion on this.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3433 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 3433 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussions? Any objection? So ordered. And Senator Dingfelder, do you want to be the carrier on this one?
Sure. I'd be happy to.
All right. And we'll close the work session on 3433. And let's see here. So we have the other three that we did public hearings on. We'll continue those since we had questions that were asked. We'll get those rescheduled. What Chair would ask Council to do is go ahead and schedule these for the next day you're on.
Monday.
And so we'll set these up for Monday. And if people have questions, if you could follow up on your questions, inquiries between now and then. And Katie, tomorrow I think we're scheduled for 8:30. And with that, we're going to go ahead adjourn for the day, and we'll be back here tomorrow at 8:30. Thanks, everyone.